Hi, and welcome to the Development Finance and CDC podcast. I'm Jack Aldane from Development Finance.
And I'm Rob Comber from CDC.
In this episode, we're looking at the subject of impact investing. Recently, it's become an increasingly hot topic, and we've seen more and more big-name investors investing in or setting up their own impact funds.
It's an area that's grown so much that the Global Impact Investing Network, or GIIN as they're known, estimate that there are now $228 billion in impact investing assets. This, they say, is roughly double what it was last year.
So, how far can this trend go? And what does it mean for sustainable development?
Well, in this podcast, we look to answer these questions. We hear from people who've seen the growth of this industry firsthand.
In a letter published earlier this year, Larry Fink, who is the CEO of BlackRock, which is the largest asset manager in the world, wrote in this letter to public company managers, quote, "To prosper over time, every company must not only deliver financial performance, but also show how it makes a contribution to society." So again, we're talking here about a sea change.
First though, Rob spoke to Abhilash Mudaliar from the Global Impact Investing Network to get his take on where he thinks the movement might be heading.
So Abhilash, let's start by just telling people what you think the definition of impact investing is.
Yeah, no, that's an important question. We define impact investing as investments made with the intention of generating a positive social or environmental outcome alongside generating a financial return. And so there are two, I guess, key components to this. One is intentionality. The central objective of the investor is to address a social or environmental issue through their investments. And secondly, there's the measurement and management of these impact goals. So those are kind of the two key defining characteristics and our definition of impact investing.
At the beginning of this podcast, we mentioned your research, which shows how much impact investing has grown, even just in the last year. Do you think this is a long-term shift?
Definitely. We believe that there's a fundamental shift taking place around the world with respect to the norms and the expectations of business and finance and society. And impact investing is a key element at the forefront of this movement. And that also includes other movements such as conscious capitalism or responsible investing, the circular economy. At its core, I think, is the idea that it's no longer acceptable nor viable for business and finance to only prioritize profit maximization for shareholders. These actors not only have a responsibility to society and the environment, but by actually considering what's good for people and what's good for the planet, they are able to improve their business performance and hence their returns in the long run. And there's a growing body of research that's starting to support the idea that taking this more holistic focus is better for long-term performance.
And what about the question of whether impact investing has gone mainstream yet?
I think impact investing has mainstreamed in terms of awareness and in terms of interest. It hasn't quite mainstreamed yet in terms of activity. And I think we're at that critical inflection point right now and in the coming years where we need to translate that growing awareness and interest into activity. And I think that will be the ultimate determinant of impact investing success.
As Abhilash said in his interview, more and more investors are becoming interested in impact investing. So to get the view from a large institution, Jack spoke to James Purcell, Head of Sustainable and Alternative Investing at UBS, the world's largest wealth manager.
James, impact investing has caught the attention of a lot of people in the last few years, but can we say that it has turned mainstream as yet? And what do you think are the criteria for judging whether something has gone mainstream or is still very much a fringe option for investors?
I think it really comes down to the definition. There is a tendency in people's eagerness to have something mainstreamed to broaden the definition so that one can capture more assets, but you don't actually have more impact. So reassigning things that were previously called sustainable investments or responsible investments and rebranding them impact doesn't actually help impact over the medium to long term, even if in the short term that kind of rebranding or impact washing, as some people like to refer to it as, would on the surface appear to help impact investing becoming more mainstream.
In terms then of a lot of people who come to you and talk about the prospect of impact investment in their own portfolios and some of the inhibitions that they have, what do you tell them about the way that impact funds are performing to encourage them that this can be as mainstream an investment as any they currently pursue?
So the question of performance, I think, is an interesting one. And in academic circles, at least, it's a question that has been resolved. If you go back all the way to the 1970s and you look at all the academic studies that have taken place over those subsequent 50 years almost, there's been about 2,200 or so that have looked at the relationship between environmental, social and governance factors and either corporate financial performance and or corporate share price performance. And what you find is, when you go through those studies, is about 90%, if not more actually, slightly more than 90%, come to the conclusion that strong sustainable practices have a neutral to positive impact on companies' performance. So from an academic perspective, it's a really easy conversation to have, which is the weight of evidence is now so great that it's quite clear that it does not have a negative impact on financial performance. Of course, there's then the emotive aspect, where people still feel that they should have a negative impact on performance because they are getting something additional over and above the financial characteristics. But of course, that can then be addressed by walking through the logic of why sustainability and why impact investing should generate comparable returns. Because at the end of the day, I think we all want to invest in companies where you have solid management practices that are looking after their workers and driving higher productivity and higher margins, but you invest in companies that don't suffer from some of the governance or environmental costs and scandals that poor governance creates. So after you've gone through the conversation on the academics and the hard numbers, there's then the emotional conversation and the logic and rationale behind the performance.
Our last interview in this episode is with Fran Siegel, head of the U.S. Impact Investing Alliance.
I'm Fran Siegel, the executive director of the U.S. Impact Investing Alliance. The Alliance is a field-building organization. We seek to catalyze the flow of U.S. capital for impact globally. I've been working in impact investing for quite a long time, squarely since I graduated from business school about 20 years ago, and I had been really thinking and speaking about impact investing before the term had been coined. So the term itself, as you may know, dates back to 2008, when an effort led by the Rockefeller Foundation looked to define what was an emerging conversation about how to use capital differently. The commitments, say in 2008, were really expressed in millions, or a stretch would be billions. Now we're seeing announcements measured in the billions, funds, multi-billion dollar impact funds being raised. And as a field, of course, we are talking seriously about how to move trillions of dollars when we consider the SDGs and the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. Increasingly, no matter what the cause or mission you care about, there are fund managers and product developers working on products that will help you express your values.
Now, Fran, you recently spoke at a UN conference on impact investing and the Sustainable Development Goals. Do you think that the general growth in impact investing will translate into growth in impact investing in developing countries?
We know that Europeans have been conducting impact investing in emerging markets for a long time and at a greater level than U.S. investors. And we think that there's a range of reasons for that. One is that the U.S. has a very robust system of community development finance institutions. And these are groups that have been doing place-based, community-based impact investing long before we had the term. I mean, they really started in the 70s. But there's some exciting prospects for change, we think, on the horizon. One is that the world is becoming smaller, and through technology and other factors, we feel so much more connected with other parts of the world. But I did want to mention one thing on the policy front that we believe could be material. And so the U.S. Congress is on the verge of passing a bipartisan overhaul of international development finance. So the current development finance arm of the U.S. government is called OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, which was started in 1971. There's also investment aspects of USAID. And these investing strategies and entities have been held to a very narrow scope of tools and strategies, more narrow and more constricted than the European development finance institutions. And if it does get voted into law, we'd have the chance to build a brand new development finance institution for the United States. And we believe with increased capacity to partner with the private sector and with other DFIs around the world, especially European DFIs, and with more tools like equity investing as an option at its disposal, we feel like this new development finance institution could catalyze upward of $100 billion or more in new impact investments over the next few years.
That's it for this episode. We hope it's given you an idea about the growth of impact investing and the potential obstacles that lie ahead for the whole industry.
For more on this subject and for more on any other areas relating to sustainable development, you can follow us on Twitter. We're @DevFinanceNews and @CDC Group. Thanks for listening.